Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 3, text 27. It's a well-known verse, which you can repeat. Prakrite kriyamanani,
prakrite kriyamanani,
gunai sarv. What is it? Gunai karmani sarvashaha.
Gunai karmani sarvashaha.
Ahankara vimurhatma.
Ahankara vimurhatma.
Kartahamiti manyate.
Kartahamiti manyate.
Prakrite kriyamanani.
Prakrite kriyamanani.
Gunai karmani sarvashaha.
Gunai karmani sarvashaha.
Ahankara vimurhatma.
Ahankara vimurhatma.
Kartahamiti manyate.
Kartahamiti manyate.
Translation: the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Is this in the right position? It seems not to be, I'm asking. Purport: two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nescience. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna in Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Hrishikesha, or the master of the senses of the material body, for due to his long misuse of the senses in sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah. Ahamkara vimurhatma kartahamiti manyate. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. I read it twice, I'll read it one more time. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Not very easy to understand. Most of you here are not native English speakers. English is not your first language. But the reason it's not easy to understand is not because of the English. Because even the average educated, well-educated person of whom his first language is English would find it difficult to understand what it means. The spirit soul. What is meant by the spirit soul? That's the first thing. Which the average person, or even an educated, highly educated person, would find it very difficult to understand what this means. Bewildered by the influence of false ego, and maybe that brings in all kinds of Freudian or Jungian concepts, thinks himself the doer of activities. And the word doer is easy to understand, right? It means someone who does things. But how often do you come across the word doer in English? If you go through the Daily Telegraph or watch programs on the BBC, how often do you find the word doer? Although it's an easy to understand word, it's just like gardener, farmer, baker, butcher, doer. So it's not difficult to understand what it means, but it's a word which you won't find in English, is it? Hardly. It's not used. So the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. It's not at all easy concepts to understand. The point I wanted to hone in on or focus on here is this word ahankara, which is a well-known, it's a common word in any Indian language, in Gujarati, in Telugu, I presume. Is it your Telugu speaking by background? Yeah. And in common usage, it has the same kind of meaning as ego in English. It means just like if someone is proud, like that, self-absorbed. Let me say, here's a lot of ahankar. And this word is particularly commonly used in spiritual circles. Among the Mayavadis, their whole endeavor is to be free of ahankar. Or more precisely, although the word ahankar is used, but more precisely to be freed of ahamta. Aham means I, and ahamta means the sense of I. So their whole idea of becoming free from ahankar is to become free from the sense of I, that I exist at all. The very idea that I exist, that I am a being, they want to be free from that because they think it's just a big illusion. In Krishna consciousness, ahankar, we understand it, or in Vaishnava dharma, we understand that Srila Prabhupada here used the word false ego. False ego. So ego in the sense of experiencing oneself to be a discrete living being. An individual living being. So that is ego. But in material life, the sense of pride and self-absorption is so common that ego, the sense of identifying with oneself, is identified with selfishness. Can you follow all this? The sense of identifying that I am, ahamta, I exist, I am, is so, in materialistic life, because everyone is so selfish and so self-absorbed, that the ego, the sense of thinking that I am, is identified with pride, because people are proud and self-absorbed and they care for themselves more than anything, generally speaking. So, but in Krishna consciousness, the idea is to be free of false ego. False ego is to think Ishvaroham. We find in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes the attitude of a demoniac person. Ishvaroham, I am the controller, I am God. Ishvaroham aham bhogi, everything in the world is meant for my enjoyment. Siddhoham, I am perfect. How do you dare criticize me? Siddhoham balavan, I am powerful. Sukhi, I am very happy. So that's demoniac egoism, false egoism. Ahamkaram balam darpam kamam krodham samashita is also mentioned in that same chapter, Bhagavad Gita, the description of the demons, that they take shelter of their own egoism, their own strength. It's not actually their strength at all, but they feel it is my strength, ahamkaram, and in this way they're very proud and full of lusty desires and anger. And that is false ego. But real ego, so instead of thinking I, false ego is to think I am the enjoyer of this world, I am the controller of this world, everything in this world is meant for me. And real ego is I am an eternal servant of Krishna. Jivasvarupai Krishna Nityadas. Ami Siddha Krishna Das Ekotha Bhule Mayar Nafar Hoya Chirodin Bhule. Forgetting that I am by nature a pure and perfect servant of Krishna, then from time immemorial we are wandering in material existence. Now this term ahankara for transcendentalists is a central word. The Mayavadis totally misunderstand it, and they think, I want to be free from the sense of I, and then when you become free from the sense of I, then you become one with everything, and then you become God. Massive misunderstanding. And Vaishnavas, they understand, being free from a false ego, and attaining the real ego. Muktir hidvanyata rupam swarupena vivastitihi. Liberation means not becoming free from any form or activities, which means if one has form and activities, that means some ego is there. As long as we are distinct living beings, then egoism is there. You distinguish yourself from other people, from other things. But that's all right if one is situated in one's actual perfect position as the servant of Krishna. So muktir hidvanyata rupa. Mukti means relinquishing all these forms which are not relinquishing. Got stuck on that word? You're okay? Translator stopped.
I don't understand.
Relinquishing means giving up. It's a muktir hidvanyata, giving up all the different forms which are not our actual form and being situated in our actual form. That means giving up false ego and becoming situated in actual ego. And the actual ego is to understand that I am an eternal servant of Krishna. So having said that as an introduction, I'll speak more about the topic of Guru, which I spoke about this morning, and being initiations this morning, and also because all of you have come to see me, many of you are my disciples from different places. Now, if you think about it, to be a guru would seem to be the most egoistic thing possible in this world. Of course, some people declare themselves God, and some people believe them. But the position of a guru in Vedic culture is an institutionalized system whereby one accepts service from others, one expects to be honored by them, one expects that his instructions will be followed. Seems to be a very egoistic situation. Sometimes people, they just like to talk about themselves. And some people, they just go on talking as if no one else has to listen to them. They just go on talking and talking, as if the whole world is meant for listening to them. But that's nothing compared to a guru who systematically sits on a seat higher than others and expects others to listen and be taken seriously. What could be more egoistic than that? To write books or give talks, that also might seem to be egoism. You write a book and publish it and you expect people should read it and And they should listen to what, they should read what I have to say. I have something to convey to others. Or one gives a talk, religious, non-religious, and you expect, I have something to say which other people should hear. So it may seem to be very egoistic. And it is very egoistic. Unless the guru or the writer or the speaker is fixed in the understanding, Ami Siddha Krishna Das, I am constitutionally a servant of Krishna. This is my proper position. And it can be difficult to understand how the guru who is accepting honor from others is actually not interested in that, but is interested in directing people toward Krishna, and really have to be on that platform. Otherwise, the whole guru-disciple relationship becomes a big mess if the guru doesn't want to direct everything to Krishna. In America once, one woman said to Srila Prabhupada, being very surprised, shocked, she said that these people, they worship you. Prabhupada said, yeah. Just as I worship my own guru. For Srila Prabhupada, it seemed to be very natural. And actually, it is natural. That's the spiritual order. But in democratic, egalitarian, communistic societies, that may seem to be something very wrong. It is wrong if it's not directed to Krishna. If it's directed to Krishna, that is required. And Krishna himself showed the example by himself accepting a guru. Now, as I say, many of you have come. I'm going to speak a little bit about myself, because many of you are coming to see me personally. So to save myself from saying these things again and again, you may wonder why I'm not visiting you, all your places. I'm not going to England this year, or America, or Czech Republic, or Switzerland. Why am I not going to so many places? There are reasons for that. I've said it many times. One thing is my health is, physical health tends to get worn down, so that I may go for months in a very low state of energy. And also I have to concentrate to write the books. Srila Prabhupada said, my books are the best part of me. So I feel the same way. It may sound egoistic to say so, but the best part of me, and what is me? I'm a servant of Srila Prabhupada. So the distilled essence of that I'm putting in the books. I'm working now on a major book called The Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada. And the first two volumes, the first volume I'm expecting to publish it in three parts. And the first two parts I hope to have out by the end of this year, if everything goes well. But I need time. I'm going to Croatia from here. And most of them doing that. The whole schema of the book is already there, and I'm just dubbing in quotes now. It's a bit difficult to explain. But it basically explains what is the position of Srila Prabhupada, and what he wanted, what is his mission, and what he wanted ISKCON to be, in his own words, in explaining different programs, and what he wanted of his disciples, and quotes like that. My books are the best part of me. Quotes like that, collected quotes. So that will be an important book. And I don't expect to remain in this body for very much longer, but the books, if I can get them out, that will remain. It's just realistic. I don't want to sound like a hypochondriac. Do you have that word?
Hypochondriac.
Check, you can translate that. Yeah. So, but realistically speaking, we're seeing many of our godbrothers becoming disabled, unable to perform their services. About 3 kilometers from here, my one godbrother, Nikhilananda Prabhu, is dying. I went to visit him the first day I came here, but he was in a coma-like state and was unable to have any conversation with him. You can go and visit if you have time and you have means to go. You can go there and sing kirtan and this and that. One of the devotees I went with, Vyapi Prabhu. Is Vyapi here? He afterwards he commented, I was shocked to see him in that state. Because he'd seen him many times, dancing, chanting, active, and you just see him incapacitated. And he said, I was shocked, and it keeps on replaying in my mind seeing him like that. But I didn't experience any shock at all. Because I've seen so many people in that situation. In the Western countries, they hide people away, dying people, hide them away. And that's becoming more and more. More and more in India, people are dying in hospitals now. What usually happens is someone's about to die, they take them to hospital, they stick a bunch of tubes in them, they spend a whole bunch of money, and then they die anyway. So I always advise people, if someone's dying, just chant Hare Krishna, let them die. Don't take them. Why don't waste so much money with this ridiculous... The doctors then know they're going to die anyway, but just to give some mental satisfaction to the people, they stick a bunch of tubes in them, give them some injections, and then they have to pay the bill. And they die in a ghost-filled hospital because so many people die in a hospital. So I wasn't shocked. I've seen some. That's in the old culture, people used to die at home. And you see people lying on beds, dying. Nothing shocking. It shouldn't be. Philosophically, it shouldn't be shocking. We should know everyone has to die. And the little boy who's running around, the time will come when he'll also have 3 legs. You know that Shankaracharya says? Eventually you get 3 legs. That means you have a walking stick. It's your extra leg. Nowadays they have these walkers, right? They have walking sticks. But the point is there. It's Srila Prabhupada said the same thing. He was lying on his bed in Vrindavan in 1977 for months, surrounded by his young disciples. Most of them were not over 30 years old. Prabhupada said, don't think this will not happen to you. So that's just realistic. I have a lot of work to do in writing, many, many things to do in writing. I'm just trying to do what I can before. You have to move on. And I'm also trying to be strict in my diet and all this kind of thing. It makes a difference. Manidhar Prabhu told me, for years he just took whatever prasad was available, whatever time it was available, but now he's not doing that. Usually people make the adjustment when the body's seriously breaking down, then they make the adjustment. to try to look after it. It's not a bad idea to do that earlier, but that is the illusion of youth, that one feels strong and you feel that, yeah, I can just go on forever like this. When I was 50, Rajah Kishore, do you remember you said that? You're a little bit older than me, physically, body-wise. What is it? You said something like, welcome to the age of 50. And now you're going to experience how the body is breaking down, like that. So, not complaining, just being realistic, like that. So that's one major reason I'm not traveling around so much. It is hard physically, and I also like to invest more time in writing books, which I feel that they're important books, the books I have to write. The subjects I'm writing on are important for devotees now and maybe long into the future. Someone should compile all the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and what he actually wanted, because the whole of ISKCON is running on the principle of Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasadaha, yasya prasada nagati katopi. By his mercy, we can get Krishna's mercy. Without his mercy, we're going nowhere. So we should know what he wants, how to please him. And he's specified what he wants. So I'm collecting those instructions and putting them systematically. And there are other books to come also. Krishna willing? We don't know. Srila Prabhupada himself, he had plans to, of course, finish the Bhagavatam, and at different times he spoke of writing commentaries on the Ramayana, Vedanta Sutras, Padma Purana, Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Satsandarbhas, and so many different things. But the nature of this world is that we are limited in time. Other services I'm also involved in. One thing which has really is very pleasing to me, because we see that devotees become so happy, is the farm projects. See, they're becoming happy because they have the opportunity in family life also to be fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, to live in devotee association 24 hours a day. And of course Srila Prabhupada wanted this very much, and the same principle, if Srila Prabhupada is satisfied, then we can all be satisfied. And it's Krishna's plan, as Srila Prabhupada said. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said to Srila Prabhupada that you are the... This was in 1977, because Srila Prabhupada was increasingly talking about farms and stressing that. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj said to Srila Prabhupada, you are the farm acharya. This was in Vrindavan, in Srila Prabhupada's rooms at the Krishna Balaram temple. And Prabhupada said, no, I'm not the farm acharya. Krishna Balarama. Krishna has the flute. Why does Krishna have a flute? He's a cowherd boy. You play the flute for calling the cows. Krishna also calls the gopis, but the manifest utility of the flute is calling the cows. And Balaram has the plow. So there you have it. Krishi Goraksha. Krishi is agriculture, which means plowing. Balaram with his plow. And Goraksha, Krishna. So between them, they cover this. So I'm very happy that these farm projects in India, I'm visiting various farm projects, and they're getting going, they're starting, devotees are coming and living and dedicating, and it's bliss. It's very, very pleasing to be in that, to see that devotees are living. They've had the faith to leave their city lives and depend on the land, the cows, and Krishna, and rise early every morning for Mangalarti, which most initiated devotees in the world don't do that. Srila Prabhupada, when he first initiated devotees in 1966 in New York City, the next day he put a notice on the board, and you've seen that notice, all devotees must rise early. So it was actually a little later that Srila Prabhupada introduced Mangalarti, but he wanted that devotees all over the world, he initiated devotees should rise early and attend Mangalarti. But due to the very nature of modern city life, most devotees are not able to do that. They're caught in the grinder, the grinding machine of material society. But in the farms, everyone rises early, goes to Mangalarti, chants their rounds, and then work is there, all day work is there. But they're all living devotees together, and morning and evening they come together and chant the holy names and discuss topics of Krishna consciousness. So there's a little summary of what I'm doing, so I don't have to tell you all individually. And please, if you visit India, most devotees visit India from time to time. So please come and visit our farm projects. You were there. How long were you there? In the 2 months. And on that farm in Gujarat?
2 weeks.
Just 2 weeks. It's a different approach to life altogether, isn't it? Of course, still in Bulgaria, there are many people who live in the villages. It's mostly older people, isn't it now? And they have no idea of spiritual life. So just living in the country in and of itself is not the point. The point is to live peacefully and be Krishna conscious. And the farm communities, that's developing. Many times I've said that devotees, the first ones, they were farming, how can you do it? But it's actually much easier than they think. They think it's going to be very difficult. But actually, it's not very difficult. It doesn't require super intelligence to do so. Generally, city people, if they want to insult someone, they call him a farmer, because the farmer is supposed to be stupid. Actually, the farmer is intelligent because he's not stuck in the city. But it's not that difficult. I mean, work is there. But by Krishna's arrangement, if you put the seed in the ground at the right time and do the right things, then the crops come. And if the weather remains good, that's an increasing problem. That the weather is so irregular. But the really hard part, and that this is really crucial, is not cultivating crops. That has to be there. Cultivating people. How people can live together peacefully. The grains of wheat can live together peacefully. They don't fight with each other. But it's getting the humans to live together peacefully and cooperating. That's the really tough part. So that there has to be a strong sense of mission, that we are here to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission. And we've come here because we want to be Krishna conscious. We're all together doing that. And it's a Sankirtan movement. We may think the Sankirtan movement means going out in the cities and chanting Hare Krishna. That's there, of course. But in the communities also, it means we've all come together to glorify Krishna. So we all have to help each other to do that. So that's the great challenge. And by Krishna's grace, there are challenges, and there will always be challenges, but by Krishna's grace, we're confident that it can be done. And so please, if when you visit India, please make a point to visit one of our farm communities. We have now 4 and 2 halves. Is it? Is we have Well, even maybe it's three and two halves, because one is still very new, and there are only three families there. And one land we're just getting, and one we have land, but and we have farming, and good farming, but we don't really have a community. So but overall there are six projects in different parts of the country. So it's very, very enlivening, and most of the devotees who visit, they're also surprised, happily surprised, that what Srila Prabhupada said about farms, it can actually be done. Will the farm communities be a success? I won't be able to say, because success will be if the devotees there, their children's children's remain there. That will be the success. So we won't see it, not from these eyes anyway, not from this body. That will be the success. So that's enough egoism from my side. I just like to share those things with you about myself. And now we're supposed to have arati. Is there any question in 2 minutes or so before the arati?
Maybe you can describe these communities in India. I was just watching your videos from Chanakeshwar.
It was completely new in what sense?
Yeah, I never heard about this.
You never heard about that? Yeah. Well, it's a new project. It's in the hills of Karnataka, South India.
So if you can kindly describe these 4.5 projects, where are they?
Oh, that's a big thing. You go and see. To describe the oldest and is Nandagram in Gujarat, and there are about, I'm not sure, about 70 devotees and 20 families, 40 Gurukul boys, like that, and we don't have enough space, so we're moving to it. Well, we're getting another land, so we'll make another village. So that's in Gujarat. In Punjab, fairly new. And from here I'm going to Ljubljana one day, then to Croatia for a few weeks. I plan to sit there, right? Then to Russia, and from there I'll go to India, then I'll go and see the community house, and it's just developing there. In Punjab, just north of Delhi. So that's one. Then we have near Hyderabad, one project. The main problem there is lack of water. Very dry part of the country. So we got some other land in the same language, telling it's now another state, Andhra Pradesh. So we got land in another part of Andhra Pradesh. The main problem there is too much. But it's, at least if there's too much rain, you can grow something. If there's no rain, it's very difficult. Several times I advised, why don't you try growing cacti as a commercial crop, but they didn't like that. Cacti, you know? Cactus, you know the word? Cactus, plural is cacti. It's possible to grow as vegetables, but it's not popular in India. So they didn't like that idea. They were so dry. And they just grow by themselves, cacti, wild cacti. Yes. Then, so that's 1, 2, 3, plus the 1.5 is the new project being set up. And then the Chennakeshav, that's also half, because it's new. So we have to see. Southern Karnataka, in the hills of Karnataka, it's a long way from anywhere. It's more, the nearest major cities are Mangalore, 4.5 hours drive, and Bangalore, 5.5 hours drive. So I thought, I'll go there and I can sit peacefully and do my writing. No one will come and visit me. I was wrong. Devotees coming all the time. So I like devotees, but when you want to concentrate on writing, it's better not to have so many visitors all the time. Very beautiful place. You saw from that video. Yes, it's strange. So anyway, nice place there. Then near to Salem in Tamil Nadu, we have land and farming is going on, but it's not really a community. Community hasn't developed. So that's a summary. If you want to know more, Google Maps. You can find out. One great thing is that these farms self, no cell phones. We're just one or two for the whole project. People don't have phones. Banned. So, if you want to talk to someone at the other side of the farm, you have to go and see them. You know that you just like that. Save so much time and diversion of energy by not being on the cell phone. No Facebook and what's that? Twitter,
WhatsApp,
and all. Except when I go there, because they want to make these videos of my lectures, and we have a little array. Although no electricity, but only for me, so I can write my books when I go there. Otherwise, no electricity. It's great having no electricity, because then automatically. Because in India, most of the year, the sunrise and sunset is around the same time. So sunset will be around 6 o'clock, and then by 8:30, anyway, you're ready to take rest. But if there's electricity and there's lights, then you can go on. People stay up all night, right? But then it's just very peaceful. There's nothing to disturb, nothing to just take rest. And then automatically you get up early in the morning. What time is the Arati?
6:30.
6:30, I see. I thought it was 6 o'clock. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, you can say about the books, but I think most of them know all about the books, isn't it?
Yes, Hare Krishna. We got the book table outside, and we got all these books.
I think most of the devotees here have my books.
And this is in German language?
It's Russian language.
What is it?
Russian language.
Russian language. This one is my memories of Srila Prabhupada. Then see Vanshidas Babaji. Then Brahmacharya and Krishna Consciousness. And this is Mothers and Mother's Masters. So please, when you go outside, have a look at list and purchase the books. It will help Maharaj to produce more books for the future generation. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So tomorrow is the Panihati Chira Dadhi festival. And coincidentally, we decided to, we'd like to go on a Harinam picnic. So we're going to Linz, which is a city in Austria. So tomorrow morning, maybe we should just skip, have a long kirtan after the Guru Puja and just skip class in the morning so that we can get everyone out in time. Because we're supposed to meet the police there. We have a fixed time to do a Harinam in the city. That's probably better. Have a prolonged Harinam kirtan and then, get in the bus. Is everyone aware of that? Did everyone tell you about the bus? No?
Morning that there will be, possibly there will be bus, we will see, and now it's already decided the bus will come tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And most of the devotees who came to me, they will go by bus, not by their own cars.
Yeah, you can go by your own car or you can go by bus if you have your car here.
Better to go with bus, that the bus is also useful. That not every bus will come and only when there were 20 devotees will go by it.
Yeah, we want to fill the bus, right? Because you have to pay 600 euros.
Also, the parking there.
So everyone pays 12 euros. And maybe a little more because the parking will cost.
And also, when there are 15 cars will go, it will be difficult for devotees to park in the same place and then get together.
That's true. So it's better to go on the bus. But then we don't want to get the bus. So it's booked out and then no one. And then some people get left behind. We also don't want that. So how are we going to work that out? How do we work that out to make sure that everyone goes?
Yeah, I have a list and the bus is almost full now.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I will just tell tomorrow morning which cars are going extra and who is going with bus. Practically most of you are going with bus. By bus. And there will be a few more information. Tomorrow morning after Mangal Art we have to still discuss
some
things.
Yeah.
There are some organizational things because police there is quite strict, so we have to be
Austrian police are notorious. They're very strict about everything.
So we have to be on time, organized, one group, not everybody here and there. And so we hope to distribute some books also. But
yeah, yeah. Take books from here. It's a bit experimental.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. Most of us are foreign to this country, but we like to do Harinam Sankirtan, every town and village. And the Danube River, one of the famous rivers of Europe, runs through that city, and apparently it's very beautiful, so we can go there and hopefully we can take our lunch prasadam there. And that would be reminiscent of the Panihati Chiradati festival in which Raghunath Das Goswami sponsored simple prasadam for all the devotees on the bank of the Ganga. So we'll be on the bank of the Danube. Yeah, if we're going to have every town and village, then we can do these festivals. There may be so many rivers we can do. Bring something to cover your head if it's going to be hot like this. If you have a shaved head, then it's better to keep it covered because the hot sun. Do you keep your head covered when you're out in the fields? No. It's a good idea. It's the hot sun, so much hot sun on the head is not at all good for health. Right? That's why at least in India the farmers always have something to cover from the hot sun. And then rain. Immediately after the hot season comes the rainy season. So then there's so much rain. But the farmers still have to go outside. Actually, this is the quiet time for the farmers because it's so hot and nothing's growing. But when the rains start, things start to grow. Everything becomes brown and dry and dusty, and then the rain starts, and all of a sudden everything becomes green everywhere. And not only the plants, but all kinds of living beings start to come to life. Many frogs come being happy with the water, and then when the frogs come, the snakes come. Also. Any other questions? I thought it was going to finish at 6. I'm a bit out of sync with what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering about your books. You were mentioning in one seminar on Vaishnava etiquette long ago.
That's the next major project. I have to work on that. Yeah, it's a major project. The Vaishnava etiquette books. It won't be published anymore. It'll be the Vaishnava etiquette book will be probably at least as big as Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava. I've already written more than 20 years ago over 100 essays for it, but somehow or other I never finished this. But I have a few devotees willing to work on that and help me finish it. It's a big job collecting so much information from here and there and putting it together. Anyway, a lot of work. But that's very important. The devotees in our farm communities, they want that. because they want to follow all these traditional usages and also to train the children in all these things. So that's another major project. Yeah, when I finish this one, then I have to move on to that one. There are others also. But let's see. Other books I have to write also to finish off. Yeah, please.
Končí prosím a hrát, že když máme mysli, takže nedokážeme vlastně vstávat, to jsou tam tam komplikace, například mysli nejsou. Takže vlastně.
How can we overcome the change, or how can we make the change successfully from the city life, where we have difficulties to practice spiritual life, and even to wake up early in the morning, and then we have a desire to move to the farm, but we should have some kind of steady spiritual life also before it. So how to make the change, the shift, successfully and not be influenced by our previous habits?
While we how can we make the transition from city life to farm life? Well, it's something like you're looking at the water in the river and you know you're going to jump in, and you just prepare your mind, okay, I'm going to jump in, and then you jump in. And when you're in the river, you have to swim. That's all. You can prepare your mind a little bit before you get in, but when you get in, you're in, and you either sink or swim. That's all. Sink or swim means that actually you won't sink, because you can always go back to the city life. But the determination should be, I'm just going to go and stay. That's all. It's very helpful if we think like that. Just, I'm going to go and stay, whatever happens. There are going to be so many difficulties, yeah. But I'm just going to stay. That person in my life, that was a very important instruction I received from my GPC when I wanted to go to India to stay. He told me, I was in England, he told me that... okay, but just go and stay. He said, there's so many devotees, they go, they say they're going to stay in India within 2 days or 2 weeks or 2 months, they come back and they just waste so much money. You just go and stay. If you're going to go and stay. He said, you decide. You go, if you want to go, go, but don't come back. So I said, okay. And there are so many difficulties, but I thought, I never thought of coming, of returning to the West. Actually, I did at one point, just before I took sannyas. I thought, well, maybe I could relocate now too. I thought, what are the major preaching fields in the world? Because I'd been in small, we could say, non-influential countries in the world. Because like if you're from Bulgaria or Czech Republic, you're preaching for the benefit of the people in those countries. But if you're in New York City, you know that if you do something significant in New York City, that's going to affect. That can have a world influence. London also. Some cities are definitely more important than others. So some countries are more. So I was thinking I'd like to... I've been in, yeah, Bangladesh, Burma, Thailand, all these places. So I thought, America is a big important field, but there are so many devotees there already. And Russia was just developing at that time. I asked about going to Russia, and they said, no, we don't want you. So I thought, okay, then the other major one is India. And Srila Prabhupada wanted devotees, so I decided to stay in India. So the decision to stay was right from the beginning, I'm going to stay. And whatever, it's going to be difficult. I know it's going to be difficult, but I'm going because there are benefits. Nothing comes easy. If we think I'll have the benefit of living on the farm without the difficulties, then it won't happen. But if we determine I'm going to stay, then you don't find the difficulties, because in many ways difficulties are in the mind. for the people who grow up in the village and they're used to nowadays you don't see that much, but they're used to walking 5 kilometers one way to get water, carry it on their head 5 kilometers back. For them, they don't know anything else. So for them, it's not difficulty, it's just life, that's all. But if you're used to just turning a tap and water comes out of it, then that could be very disturbing. That it's so difficult just to get water. But then if you think, well, anyway, I'm just whatever the difficulties, I'm going to accept it, then you don't, it doesn't bother you. Okay, this is what Krishna is giving, I have to take it. And the first summer I was in Bangladesh, that was 1979. I learned later it was the hottest summer in 40 years. And I was traveling around by public transport on buses. Bus means you're crammed in with far more people than would be imagined in this part of the world. Less than half of the people are in the seats. There are more people standing on the roof also. And with goats and chickens and all kinds of things. So I was traveling around like that, and it was very hot, no doubt. But I thought, well, all these people, they're living here. They can live. They're living here, and someone has to preach to them, and so they can live here, I guess I can too. So I did. It's a matter of mental adjustment. Don't think about it too much. Just make your decision and do it, that's all. Then you can do it. But if you're all the time thinking, well, maybe I should go back to the city, maybe I should go, then you're already finished. Even before you start. When you go, you have to be determined, that's all. Sankalpam bhavam karma. By making a decision, then your desire becomes fixed. Yeah.
In the farm in Sweden, Almik's garden, then it's very difficult because there's kind of both city life and...
Most of our ISKCON farms are... They're not really farms so much as they're country residences for commuters who work in the cities. They're hopeless.
And it's so established. So
yeah, it's hopeless. It's hopeless. Then you can't establish farm community there. Farm community means everyone, their means of livelihood is there, not somewhere else. It's not a matter of earning some money and living off your savings on the farm. The real thing is to get rid of money as far as possible. You can't imagine, huh?
It's a little impractical also in the Western world, I think, because you need money to pay for a lot of things. I mean the land and the...
Yeah, you need money to pay for the land. Yeah, give me all your money and I'll use it for buying land. It's a fact, for buying land, yeah. But the aim is that we should produce our own food. And what do we need, actually? Food, clothing and shelter. So all these things can be produced locally. Traditionally, people, food, they produce locally. They didn't... In Sweden, you get... grape juice from Italy, probably, isn't it? Something like that. Pasta sauce, tomato sauce from Italy. But otherwise people, they ate what they produced locally. They were seasonal foods. Some foods come at certain... Food, clothing also has to be produced locally. From cotton, wool, and leather and jute and hemp and maybe some other things also. So these can be used for clothing. And buildings, you build out of local materials, stones or clay, which you can either make mud houses or wooden houses, like that. Wooden houses still built in Sweden?
Yes.
Mostly. Not plenty of wood in that country. So like that, it just produced locally. That's all. But we are very much caught up in the money culture. It is difficult to break from it, but it is a challenge given to us by Srila Prabhupada to do this. It's a great challenge to do so. And it requires great faith, just like Srila Prabhupada. It was a great challenge for him to go to the Western countries and preach Krishna consciousness. It required great faith in the order of his guru. He did it because he had faith in the order of his guru, that it could be done. So we should have faith in the order of Srila Prabhupada, that these communities can be established. It rests a lot on faith. We have to have faith it can be done. And frankly speaking, the communities that are developing there in India, the devotees who are going there, it's faith in the order of Srila Prabhupada, and it's also faith because I'm behind and pushing and saying you should do this. So they have faith in what I'm telling them, which is the same as what Srila Prabhupada said. So I told the devotees recently that we'll have to see that your faith in these projects will have to survive after I've passed away. It's not just I'm coming now and devotees feel enlivened when I go there. Recently one Mataji was there, said that when I come it gives them strength, because otherwise it is difficult. And actually it's more difficult for the women than for the men in many ways, because in the cities they're used to having their mixies for cooking and their gas for cooking, and there's everything you have to do by hand. Of course there are kitchen tools, cooking on wood and so many things. So in many ways it's more difficult for them. But she said that because I come, it gives them inspiration to go on. So you have to see. You have to maintain, carry your faith forward. Just like we have to carry faith forward in Srila Prabhupada's word. Prabhupada was there directly inspiring his disciples. But then the test comes after he passes away, that we have to continue with the same program that Srila Prabhupada gave us. That's after the passing of any guru, it's a great test for the disciples, how they stick to his words. When he's personally there, it may be easier, but then because the gurus and acharyas, they push against the whole current of material life. They're not supposed to go along with it, then there's no need for any guru. If you just go along with the current of material life, then what do you need a guru for? The guru means he helps you to go against the current of material life and come out of the stream of consciousness that carries us through the 8,400,000 species of life. So we really have to become attached to the orders, the vani. So that will be seen. And then in every generation there should be gurus who carry on the mission. Every disciple is supposed to be a guru in the next generation. Even in the present generation. So it's a great challenge. It's worth living for. Otherwise what's the use of living in this miserable, meaningless society? People are living completely useless and meaningless lives. To accept Krishna consciousness means to accept some discomfort, at least mental discomfort, because people say, why are you doing that? You're crazy. You don't fit in with everyone. So it means to accept some discomfort. But by accepting the comfort of Maya, that we become socially accepted, then we have to accept the discomfort of Maya also, which means repeated birth and death. the gurus and the acharyas, they have to keep on telling us this. Otherwise our tendency is to revert back to our so-called comfort of living a pleasant life. Pleasant meaninglessness. And then at the end of life, so many people, if they have any brain substance left whatsoever, then they reflect on their life and realize it was all completely meaningless. Otherwise, old people, they try to, with increasing desperation, they try to continue the illusion of being happy in this material world. Old age is miserable. It's not just because of the physical difficulty, but the realization I'm going to death and I don't know what's happening after that. And also the realization I just passed a life. What for? There's nothing there. Empty. Jai Shri Prahlad Narasimha Dev. Hare Krishna. Who's going to lead the kirtan? Someone who's going to get everyone jumping. Leads a good kirtan. Gadadha, you're all ready? Want to lead the kirtan?